You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
St. Louis Cardinals have a challenging season ahead of them, always with high expectations, and 2017 will be no different. I'm Allison Footer. I'm here with Jen Langosch. Jen, let's start off by talking about what everyone is talking about. That is how excited everybody is about Dexter Fowler joining this team. He adds so much, especially to the top of that batting order.
Yeah, I mean, he really checked all the boxes that the Cardinals needed going into the offseason. They wanted to get better defensively. He does that by helping out their outfield. They wanted to look at maybe another option at the leadoff spot, so they had more flexibility with Matt Carpenter. Dexter Fowler gives you an option up there. He's been one of the best leadoff hitters in recent years. And then I think what's really important and is maybe a little less tangible is the influence he can have in that clubhouse. This was a clubhouse last year that at times felt a little stale, maybe a little bit too workmanlike. Dexter Fowler comes in immediately, a big personality, very gregarious, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some of that maybe rub off on some of the younger players around him. So he comes in with great credibility. He comes in with a World Series ring from last year, and the financial commitment the Cardinals made to him, one of the biggest contracts in franchise history, so he comes in with that as well.
It's a very strange situation. I was asking Dexter earlier because it's like he signed with a team that's in the division of the team that he just won a World Series with. I know that, you know, players don't get as into that as the fans do, but it's still a little strange from a Cub to go to a Cardinal after what happened with the Cubs last season.
It is, and they're going to see each other 19 times beginning on opening night, April 2nd, so it's not going to take long to see his former teammates. You know, it was kind of funny, like he was coming in for a Cardinals winter warm-up in January, and then the next day headed to the White House with the Cubs to go visit the president. So, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit there. You know, you look back at last offseason as well. We saw Jason Hayward and John Lackey kind of jump ship, go to the rival Cubs. Now this year it's Dexter Fowler coming south to the Cardinals. So I know his relationship with a lot of those guys in Chicago remains very strong, but it will be interesting for him to be on the other side of things now.
Let's move to the infield. So Colton Wong gets to go back to second base. It seems to be a little bit more settled in this infield than it was last season, when it seemed like we were always reading and hearing about just different things that they were doing. So there's some stability, and I guess third base is really the thing that's up for grabs.
Yeah, you look across the infield, really third base is the only competition that we're going to have. And it's Johnny Peralta, Jed Jerko are your options there, which are very intriguing options. I mean, you have Johnny Peralta, who's in the last year of a four-year contract. We saw him perform very well for this team in 14 and 15 as a shortstop. It was here last year, early in Grapefruit League play, that he went down with a thumb injury, and then we saw Ledmys Diaz emerge as one of the biggest surprises for this team last year. So shortstop is no longer an option for Johnny. He's going to get work at third base and try to be a third baseman really for the first time since 2010 for a full season. Then on the other hand, you have Jed Jerko, and Jed Jerko led this team in home runs last year with 30. He does give the Cardinals a utility option should they want to kind of keep him as an infielder that can play anywhere, but he too is going to get a look at third base. But you mentioned Colton Wong. I think, you know, Colton is a big piece of what the Cardinals want to do this year, in that they know that their infield defense has to be better than it was a year ago. I mean, this was a club that was really let down by the fundamentals. If you can put Colton at second base, and if he can separate the offensive side from the defensive side, this is a guy who people out here won't hesitate to tell you can be a gold glove second baseman.
Another interesting area is the bullpen. So I know that that's still kind of taking shape, but we're going to be paying attention to what Trevor Rosenthal, not only what he can do, but whether they're going to ask him to do. So this could be kind of a big season for him.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor can kind of take any sort of role. I mean, they're going to build him up as a starter for the first time, and Trevor has wanted to start ever since he broke into the majors. So they're going to build him up innings-wise. I'm not sure that there's going to be an opportunity for him to break into the rotation unless there's another injury along the way. But if he's built up to pitch multiple innings, it gives the Cardinals great flexibility in how they use him. They have another closer in Son Wan Oh, but perhaps he makes his way back into a setup role. Perhaps he becomes kind of a multi-inning reliever that can bridge games from starters to the bullpen. I mean, what we saw of Andrew Miller in the postseason last year really intrigued the Cardinals about having a guy with Trevor Rosenthal's stuff who can pitch multiple innings. So the key for Trevor right now is to show that he's healthy, because he wasn't all of last year, and to get his command back. We saw that walk rate really escalate for him last season. So if he has a really good spring and can impress with this new role and being stretched out, I think the sky's the limit for where he can be used on this team.
With the injury to Alex Reyes, how does that change the competition during spring training, and how do they move forward from that?
Yeah, I mean, you looked at coming into camp, it looked like it was going to be Alex Reyes versus Michael Wacha for that fifth rotation spot. It does hurt the Cardinals' depth. There's no getting around that. Whether Alex Reyes started the year on the Major League team or not, he was going to likely contribute in a big way this year. So I think Wacha all of a sudden becomes a much more important piece on this team. The good news for him is that the strength work that he did this year to get this offseason to get his shoulder healthy seems to be putting him in a good place. place. So he's going to be in that mix. Luke Weaver, who we saw come up and pitch for the Cardinals in August and September, he's going to get a look. And then Trevor, who we just mentioned, might also get a look for that starting job. But I think if all falls right, the Cardinals would like to give Michael Wacha that opportunity and hope that maybe he can return to being the guy he was in 2013 when he kind of lit the world on fire in the postseason and get past some of these injury issues he's had the last few years.
And then speaking of injuries, Adam Wainwright, Lance Lynn, it's key for those guys to get back to where they were before they had to deal with various issues, especially Adam Wainwright, who said just a little bit ago that he was just terrible. So that, in a perfect scenario, those guys would be what we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, what Adam dealt with last year was just really never feeling strong enough. And we saw him make a miraculous recovery from that Achilles injury in 2015. He really thought he was past it. Last year, however, his delivery was constantly out of whack, just all the time searching, and never really got into a consistent groove. He is getting older, so there's a lot of questions about whether or not he's on some sort of, you know, normal age decline. But he'll certainly tell you that he can be better than he was last year. And you mentioned Lance Lynn, and perhaps we didn't talk about his absence enough last year. This was a guy who in years past had been a reliable 200 inning starter for this team, a workhorse, somebody who you knew would pitch deep into games. To get him back from Tommy John surgery, basically 18 months removed from Tommy John surgery, Cardinals expect him to be ready to go from the first Grapefruit League game on and expect big things from him in the rotation.
And it's just in general, the NL Central is always one of the toughest divisions, if not the toughest division. Clearly the Cardinals were not in the division race last year, and they just barely missed the wild card. What absolutely has to go right for them to be able to compete in this division?
They're going to have to stay healthy. That's one of the issues that they had last year, and they're going to have to do the little things right. I mean, we saw so many issues with base running. This was a team that some metrics will tell you was the worst base running team in baseball last year, and from, you know, the eyes that I had, it sure looked like it. Defensively, they're going to have to be more sound, and the starting pitching is going to have to be a little bit more reliable than it was a year ago. So it's kind of an interesting feel in camp here. You know, for Mike Matheny, it's the first time that he's opened spring training either not having been the division champ or not being the favorite in the NL Central. You know, both of those now belong to the Chicago Cubs. So Cardinals kind of like being, you know, the one that trying to move on up instead of being chased. But, yeah, they have a tough road ahead with Chicago bringing back the team that they have. But this Cardinals team will tell you that they believe if things go right, there's no reason why they can't be in that race.
Okay, thank you, Jen.
The Pirates came to camp with a typically optimistic attitude this spring. Their sort of speaking order has been that last season was a setback that you have to have in order to bounce back. So they believe that this is a year that they can bounce back in 2017. A lot went wrong last year. They had a lot of injuries. Gerrit Cole was hurt a lot of the year. Francisco Cervelli was hurt behind the plate. Andrew McCutchen obviously was not himself in 2016. So they believe with a couple of bounce back performances, a lot of good health, and a couple things breaking their way, they can compete in the National League Central. It's obviously not an easy task with the defending World Series champion Cubs and the Cardinals sort of rebuilt and ready to contend again. But they think that if a lot of things break their way, they're certainly able to get back in the mix like they were in 2013, 14, and 15, when they won 98 games. Yeah, Andrew McCutchen is still a Pittsburgh Pirate. He's just no longer the center fielder. I think the first part was a little bit more in question in the offseason, given the trade rumors that seemed so persistent, basically from the start of the winter meetings. That kind of died down a little bit after that. He feels comfortable with how that went down, sort of acknowledged it's part of the business. The switch to right field came as a surprise. He had been told that he would make the decision when he felt the time was appropriate, but the Pirates actually told him that he was moving to right field this year. It's something they discussed and looked into all offseason. They believe that's their best outfield configuration. Starling Marte, one of the best defenders in all of the National League, playing center field, moved Gregory Polanco to left, put Andrew McCutchen in right field. Everybody has seen the tweet that he sent out after the move of Roberto Clemente. He's clearly come to terms with the adjustment. He said it will be a breeze to play right field, so he seems confident and ready to bounce back in 2017. The best news of the Pirates camp so far might be that Gerrit Cole is on track and ready to go come opening day. His health was obviously in question from the start of last season when he reported to spring training with a little bit of rib discomfort. He is good to go this time. You expect to see him as the Pirates opening day starter. That's not official yet, but it's pretty safe to assume. Behind him, they have Jameson Taillon and Ivan Nova, two of their bright spots from 2016. Nova is just so clearly comfortable in Pirates camp. We've seen that from the moment that he stepped into Pirate City for the first time. He's dyed his hair. He's, you know, laughing in the clubhouse. He's having a good time. And obviously the success on the mound was apparent last season. He worked well with pitching coach Ray Searidge. He's got his former Yankees catchers in Francisco Cervelli and Chris Stewart. Everything sort of seems to be lining up for him to have another sort of resurgent season, hopefully for a full year for the Pirates in 2017. There is one question mark at the back end of the rotation, assuming Chad Kuhl will be the number four starter. There's really four candidates for that fifth spot. Drew Hutchison, who has the major league experience and resume. Tyler Glasnow, who has the top prospect status and the potential. Trevor Williams, who's a right-hander who gets the kind of ground ball profile the Pirates like, and Stephen Brault, the only left-hander in the mix, who is a really encouraging prospect as well. So that's probably the most interesting position battle in Pirates camp right now, sort of open up, you know, at this point, no clear front runner, but we'll see how that one plays out once games get started. Jung Ho Kang did not report to camp along with the rest of the Pirates position players. He is awaiting a trial following his latest DUI arrest in South Korea. That's scheduled for February 22nd. It's unclear exactly when he will report to camp, you know, what his status is for opening day, also unclear, but the Pirates are in pretty good shape beyond that at third base. They have David Fries, who they signed last spring and extended in August. He could be their everyday third baseman, much like he was last April. They have some depth there in Max Moroff, Chris Bostic, Alan Hansen, Adam Frazier, a lot of utility-type options. Jason Rogers could step in there. And they've even kicked around the idea of moving Josh Harrison, a former utility man turned second baseman last year, giving him a little bit more time at third base. So Jung Ho Kang is critically important to the Pirates lineup, given the power that he's shown during his time in the major leagues. But they do feel comfortable in their depth if he's not able to go on opening day.
The depth of the team is certainly in starting pitching right now, and that's probably the biggest decision they have this camp, how they'll break. They have at least six, maybe seven established guys. They added Tommy Malone over the winter, and then they finished last year with six pitchers, and they were pitching well. They were one of the best starting rotations in baseball in September. And the question is, can that carry into this year? I don't know that they expect to be a contender this season, but I think this year is more about identifying which players are good enough and are under club control long enough to be on the back end of this thing when they emerge from rebuilding. And there are some starting pitchers who fit that build. Zach Davies is a guy who was really effective after getting called up last year. He's only 24 years old. Lots of club control left. They would love for him to be a part of this thing moving forward. And I've got Jimmy Nelson circled this year because his stuff is better than his numbers in the major league so far suggest. He has an opportunity to be a better big league pitcher. And he's got some club control left as well. So there's kind of strength in numbers, even if there's not a clear number one on this team. They've got three guys at catcher that they like, all acquired in trades, all during the David Stearns era, who all bring kind of a little different skill set, and they're going to have to choose. I think Jett Bandy is probably the leading candidate. The Brewers got him from the Angels when they traded away Martin Maldonado and completed the breakup of that Jonathan Lucroy-Martin Maldonado tandem, which had been 5 or 6 years. The sort of stability at that position most clubs don't have. So this is a sort of a significant transition behind the plate for this team. They like Jett Bandy, the way he receives the ball. They think there's power there that hasn't shown up in his minor league numbers, but just the eyeball says he's got some power, and they think that'll translate into his numbers as he compiles some at-bats in the major leagues. And then the other two guys are Manny Pena, who spent some time with the club last year, and Andrew Susak, another guy they got in a trade late last year from the Giants, who also got a call-up in September. So those two players have at least a little bit of familiarity with some of the pitchers on this staff, and they're probably going for that other spot. It's going to be really interesting. The way David Stearns puts it is, you know, they'll have to make a decision, obviously, this spring, but the way he sees it, all three are likely to play a role for this team during the season because it's extremely rare that you start with two catchers and go through the entire season without having to make any changes. Eric Thames is probably the one guy on this team that's drawing some national attention because his story is so unique. Put up big numbers over three seasons in Korea. Now the question is, will it translate back to the big leagues? He did not really gain a foothold in the major leagues during his first stint, but now he's a different hitter. The Brewers think a more selective player, much better strike zone awareness. Again, those numbers in Korea don't lie. The question is now, he's going to see a lot more velocity in Major League Baseball. And is he going to be able to handle that velocity? And nobody knows. I mean, we'll have to watch him in spring training games, and we'll have to watch him during the season. But the Brewers made a 3-year commitment to him. So that shows you that they're pretty confident in the video work that they did, the meetings that they had with him, the scouts they talked to. They're reasonably confident that this is going to translate back to Major League Baseball, and he's going to be a much better player than he was the first time around. VR is the second baseman. He took this move pretty well for a guy who played well at shortstop for the Brewers last season. That's obviously his natural position. No shortstop wants to give that up. But they think he'll actually be a better defensive player as a second baseman than maybe he was at shortstop, and certainly better than he was at third, where he played some late last season, committed some errors. VR says up the middle is much more comfortable for him. He can see the signs. He can position himself as the pitch is being delivered. And offensively, I mean, that was a breakthrough last year. The on-base percentage was way up. Stolen bases led the major leagues. He's an aggressive, energetic player. Craig Counsell really likes having him on top of the lineup. For him, the question is, can he repeat what he did last season? Was last season real? If it is, the Brewers have a really good player on their hands, and they made a really, really good trade for a minor league pitcher. Well, Travis Shaw is the third baseman, and the Brewers made that trade with Boston. They really want Travis Shaw to succeed at that position. He gives them another left-handed bat. Eric Thames is another lefty bat they picked up over the winter to get a little balance in what had been a righty-heavy lineup. Shaw is a big guy for a third baseman, but they say he actually moves well and plays the position well. He played there in Boston last season and actually did it okay. He says he kind of wore down as that season went on, so he changed his offseason a little bit to try to stay strong throughout the full year. That's going to be something to keep an eye on this season. But it does mean that Hernán Pérez, who played everywhere, literally everywhere for the Brewers last season except pitcher and catcher, will probably do the same. He's sort of Milwaukee's Ben Zobrist. And he had a nice offensive season last year, still a young player. He came up to the big leagues with the Tigers so young that he's still kind of developing, and last season was the first one where he gained a little bit of a foothold. So I think he's going to be a valuable guy for Craig Counsell, who above all else values versatility. I don't know if we know if the bullpen is an Achilles heel yet. It certainly is an area that underwent tremendous change. Last season, they were a top six, I think, bullpen in the National League. But the three guys at the back end, Jeremy Jeffress, Will Smith, and Tyler Thornburg, have all been traded since August. So there are new players in these roles, starting with Neftali Feliz, the free agent that the Brewers brought in after his velocity really jumped back up last year in Pittsburgh. He looked much more like the player he was in Texas during those World Series years, the closer he was. He's going to get a chance to close. And then the Brewers have opportunity for some young players. Corey Knebel is a guy that they've traded for in recent years. Jacob Barnes is one of their own products of the farm system. Hard-throwing, young, big right-handers who are going to have a chance to jump up and pitch some late innings. And then they have Carlos Torres back, who, you know, as we stand here in spring training, Torres was off in Florida with Atlanta, and then he spent the second half of spring training in free agency looking for a job. The Brewers picked him up on the last day, and he ended up letting the team in appearances. He really was a workhorse for that team, and I think they'll expect him to fill that role again. He's sort of the utility man of that bullpen, able to pitch in a million different scenarios. The Brewers are very clear-eyed that they play in an incredibly difficult division, starting with probably the best team in the National League, maybe the best team in the major leagues, in the Cubs, the world champions. They have no illusions that the Cubs are going to be good for a while, that the Cardinals always find a way to be good, that the Pirates still have a window of opportunity because of those great young outfielders that they have, and that the Reds are trying to do the same thing Milwaukee is in rebuilding right now and kind of taking a step back in order to take two steps forward. I think the way that David Stearns and Craig Counsell look at it, though, is we can't make our decisions and our evaluations based on what those other teams are doing. We have to make our evaluations based on how to get the most out of the players we have and then how to get and develop more good players. Just get as much players, good players, into the system as you can, develop them, and see who gets to the big leagues and what kind of product you have. I really think they're looking more within than without. And if you think about it from their position, if David Stearns sits up in his office, it really does him no good to sit there and worry about what Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer are doing in Chicago. He can't do anything about that. He doesn't have the resources that that team has. All David Stearns can do is try to develop the best system he can here. And if we look at his track record, it looks like he is just going for strength in numbers. He has traded for a tremendous number of prospects at whatever position they play. He's not filling specific holes. He's just trying to get a ton of really good young players, try to get them to the big leagues and see what you got.
Mark, let's talk about this Reds team. Do you think it's turned the corner from what it went through last year, and do you think that's like something they're going to build on?
Well, they did finish one game over 500 in the second half of last season, and they would like to build on that and feel like they have turned a corner somewhat. It still remains to be seen, though, if they can actually do that. They traded Brandon Phillips. Now they have Jose Peraza as their everyday second baseman, who's still, although he had a very nice year last year, he still has something to prove. They're a little thin on the pitching side with Homer Bailey going down. They're going to have two prospects take those last two spots in the rotation. So the lineup looks pretty good. They have some depth issues on the bench, but it does seem possible that they could finally maybe transition out of rebuilding and give it a little bit more closer to contending. They're not quite there yet. I think it could be a kind of a transitional season where they do that, though.
Devin Mesoraco's played 18 games the last 2 years. Is he healthy enough? Is the job his, or does Barnhart have a shot at it, or could they trade off?
Well, right now, he seemed to be healthy. Mesoraco freely says that right now is all talk, and it really doesn't matter until he proves himself in the games, and he really wants to do that. The plan going into the season right now is, if he stays healthy, is that that will give him 50 to 60% of the opportunities to catch and kind of work in a tandem situation with Barnhart. See how it works out, and then maybe gradually get in there. I don't think either one of these guys is going to catch 120 games. They just hope that Mesoraco is healthy and can contribute, and if not, they're going to have to look at maybe adding some catching depth.
Talk about left field. Is it Shevler's job, or does Jesse Winker even have an outside chance of getting in?
Actually, left field is Adam Duvall's job. Okay. Adam Duvall proved himself last season to be the everyday left fielder. He was an all-star, but he also demonstrated good defense. Over in right field, Scott Shevler came up after Jay Bruce was traded on August 1st and showed that he can do the job every day. Right now, it's his job to lose. As for Jesse Winker, they're not ruling out that he can't make the team. They're just saying that he's going to have to force his way on the roster. And Winker, I talked to him, and he's prepared to do that. You never know what could happen. There could be an injury. Somebody like Shevler could drop off or have a poor spring. And a guy like Jesse Winker, who's the number three prospect in the organization, could certainly move up and take a job, or at least put himself in position to be the first guy called up.
The team has lost so many veteran players now that Brandon's off to Atlanta. Does it make a difference, or they've been doing this for the last two or three years?
I think everyone's pretty much rolling with the punches on this. They've seen guys come and go, whether it's Johnny Cueto, Jay Bruce, Brandon Phillips, Todd Frazier. They just keep leaving, and they seem to have accepted the fact that they're rebuilding. They're excited about the fact that the core of guys that they have are young and talented, and they want to build around those guys. They want to establish themselves this year, show they belong in the major leagues, and then take it going forward from 2018 and beyond.
Okay. Change at the top was permanent now with the president of baseball operations and general manager's positions like that. Is this a new stamp on this organization with a new outlook on how they're going to put players together?
I don't know if it's going to be how new it's going to be, but you definitely see there's a difference. One of the things that Dick Williams did when he kind of got complete control is you do sense that he might be more aggressive. That was demonstrated with the Dan Straley trade. You got a guy who had a breakout year last year off the waiver wire, won 14 games and pitched 191 innings, and his value could not have been higher. The safe move would have been to keep him and keep him in the rotation, have something that, a sure thing. And what they ended up doing is they struck while his value was at his peak, and they traded him to the Marlins for three prospects. I think that's the kind of things you're going to see going forward. I think they're going to be more willing to move guys when they need to, when their value is high, and to keep trying to add prospects. And then finally, when they start contending, they might take some of these prospects and move them to get veterans. So it's going to be interesting to see how he works, but you definitely think he's going to put his own stamp on the team.
Talk about the Central. I mean, you got the World Championship team there. You got a Pirates team that's still very good, and you got a Cardinals team that's always in contention. The Reds know that they got a long way to go before they're going to be able to contend with these teams.
The Reds certainly have an uphill battle to try to stay in contention in the Central Division. The Cubs are certainly the team to beat. But one thing they do have going for them, I don't think the Cardinals and the Pirates have made a lot of inroads. I think those teams might take a step back this year. It's really a one playoff team division right now, the way it looks with Chicago. But I don't see St. Louis, I don't see Pittsburgh, and I don't see Milwaukee making any threats to go to the playoffs. So the Reds have an opportunity here to establish themselves in the division and see if they can finish third or second even, but probably more likely third or fourth. And if they can do that, I think they'd be pretty happy, especially if they can get as close to 500 as possible. 75 wins would not be out of the question.
Last question. With Bronson Arroyo, if he's healthy, he told me the other day, it's like, if I'm healthy and I can contribute, I'm great. If I have one more setback, I'm grabbing my guitar and going home.
Yeah, it's really, for Bronson Arroyo, it's make the team or bust. He really has no middle ground. You're not going to see him toiling in the minors and trying to hang on for every last thread of baseball. He kind of plainly said the hitters will let him know if he's able to pitch in the major leagues again. He hasn't pitched in the big leagues in 2 years. He's coming off of a shoulder and an elbow surgery, and he's a different kind of guy. When some pitchers come to camp and they're throwing 84 miles an hour, you might say they're washed up, but with Bronson Arroyo, that might be fine for him. He could use his deception. He's not afraid to throw any pitch in any count, and he can still fool hitters, possibly. And if he can do that, he may have a chance to make this team.
Do the Reds have any breakout players right now? Some guys who can really open some eyes, or is it still a little too early?
if he makes the team, Amir Garrett could be a real breakout sensation. He's a left-handed pitcher, one of their top prospects. He's the number two prospect in the entire organization, and he's competing for one of those two starting spots. Even though he's only has a half season of AAA experience, they're really excited about him. He can throw 96 miles an hour. He's got a long arm that hides the ball pretty well and comes on top of hitters pretty quickly. So if he could have a breakout season, Jose Peraza with a full year as a regular second baseman has a chance to break out and become an established baseball major league baseball player. And then we'll have to see. They hope that some of these other young guys can, like Cody Reed or Robert Stevenson, can also, after some struggles last season, show that they belong here and maybe be the prospects that they expect them to be.
Coming off a historic 2016, how does this team, and Joe Madden in particular, keep this team from being complacent headed into 2017?
With Joe Madden, things are never complacent. I'm not sure that's a word that fits. He's already decided that his themes for this year are going to be uncomfortable, be authentic, and also don't forget the heartbeat, which refers back to the rain delay and the little pep talk Jason Hayward gave the players in Game 7. We've been kind of waiting to see what they're going to do. He's been planning a big surprise, and we usually get a lot of interesting things during practice. We had some live bear cubs last year. We had a mime. We had a band come out here and perform. So you never know what to expect. So he's doing everything he can to keep things lively. What I like is that the players appear to be very hungry. They're not resting on their laurels at all.
How much will the team rely on players that have won before, like a Lester or a Lackey, just in order to keep the ship righted and keep their focus in this year?
Yeah, Lester and Lackey are key, but actually I think they already started it, which sounds funny, because David Ross told them shortly after the World Series was over, turn the page. So he's sort of got them thinking, okay, it's over, let's go and get going to 2017. So it's, yeah, turn the page is the other theme that's being stressed here.
Turnover is a large part of the game for any team, especially a team that has the success that the Cubs had last year. But the nucleus of this team is intact. How important is that continuity from last year into this season?
The Cubs come into spring training with so many position player spots already set. Really, there's no battles as far as position players go. They're just looking for some bench players and try and sort that out. And it's which is really key. Okay, yes, they're going to miss Dexter Fowler, who signed with the Cardinals, but they've already projected Kyle Schwarber as being a leadoff guy, possible leadoff guy, and that would take care of what Fowler did.
Versatility is such a hallmark of any Joe Madden team, in particular this team that has the athletes that they have all across the diamond. How important is that versatility and athleticism for what Joe wants to do, and just even for the players, in order to spell players, give them rest, and be able to play a multitude of positions?
Yeah, the versatility is really big. I mean, I'll never forget the game where Chris Bryant played third base, left field, and right field, and I think he got like four hits or something and went crazy that game. Joe likes to have players that he can move around, pieces that he can move around. They will miss Travis Wood, who was a reliever who did play outfield and made a great catch, but I think that some of the other relievers feel a little challenged by that to see if they can sort of step in. You're going to have Ben Zobrist become a little bit more of that super utility guy again. He'll be playing left field and second base because of the emergence of Javier Baez. So guys are going to have to be on their toes. And actually, I think the players like it. They think it's fun.
How do you see this lineup shaking out? Joe has a lot of different options. Obviously, you know what the middle of the lineup is going to look like, but he's got a lot of different options with moving guys up and down the lineup.
Lineup will be pretty much the same as it was kind of toward the end of last year, but what Joe's been talking to us about is how he's considering whether or not to have the pitcher bat eighth. That's something he wanted he likes to call them the geeks, talk about and sort of run the numbers on it to see if maybe having Schwarber bat first, having the pitcher eighth, and then maybe Albert Almora Jr. at nine would give another player to get on base ahead of Schwarber, give him another RBI situation. So they might return to that, which Madden did during 2015.
Speaking of Schwarber, so much has been made of his story last year and coming back from the injury just in time to help the team get over the hump and win the World Series. How do you see Schwarber's season playing out so far? And talk a little bit about the time that you are seeing with him behind the plate in the spring.
I think one of the most fun days so far this spring, and they haven't been here in camp very long, but was on Friday, when Schwarber actually got to go catch a bullpen session with John Lackey. John Lackey gave him a huge hug, which was really sweet, and then Schwarber went and caught the session. And we all knew that Schwarber wanted to do more, but they're limiting him to 1 to 2 workouts like that a week just to sort of ease him into it. This was a major issue. If he had only torn one ligament, he could come back a lot faster. He tore 2 ligaments in his left knee, and it's just a slow process. I think they're looking at him as the third catcher, kind of the emergency catcher. I know he would prefer to be higher, but then again, he could be the Cubs catcher in 2018, 2019, backing up Wilson Contreras, which would give them 2 really good young catchers.
Few players have had the start to their career as prolific as Chris Bryant. Is there room to improve, and how high is the ceiling for this young man?
We've been trying to figure out what award he can win next, because he's already won the College Baseball Player Award, then the Minor League Player Award, then the Rookie of the Year, then he was the MVP. So I'm not sure what you do next after that. He's already got the World Series. The nicest thing I think that fans should know about Chris Bryant is he may be the most humble MVP you're going to meet. I mean, all this fame, all this success has not changed him one iota. And that's really impressive to me, to see a young kid like that. He could be all excited about all the bling and all the everything that goes with being an MVP, but he's handled it really well.
Let's talk about the rotation. The key components of the rotation remain intact from last year. Obviously very strong up top. Tell us a little bit about the importance of that continuity, and as well as the battle for the fifth spot in the rotation.
Actually, the Cubs are in really good shape pitching-wise. You know, they've got John Lester, Kyle Hendricks, Jake Arrieta, and John Lackey back. And then there's a little bit of a fight for the fifth spot between Brett Anderson and Mike Montgomery, 2 lefties. What will be interesting in spring training is that they're going to ease the regulars into action. Fans won't see those 4 until like after 1 week of games, because of they played a 7th-month season, and they want to make sure that they don't put too much stress on them. So now Anderson and Montgomery will be getting starts, as well as a lot of the bullpen guys. The issue on this team is trying to figure out who's going to be in the bullpen at the end.
Let's talk about that bullpen, because one of the key components is no longer here, and they made a big trade to get another elite level closer. How do you see this bullpen shaking out?
Well, we've got Wade Davis at the end, and that's set, and then you've got Hector Rondon and Pedro Strop. Justin Grimm and Carl Edwards Jr. really emerged in terms of a setup guy. And after that, those other spots are going to be kind of interesting to see how they get filled out. There's just a lot of pitchers in camp. Koji Uehara, I forgot him. He's here, veteran presence. He also has World Series experience, so he knows what it takes. And I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. But the thing that I kind of like watching is like a Carl Edwards Jr. Here's a guy who I don't think anybody expected to be pitching in Game 7 of the World Series, and yet he was in there making key outs. If Montgomery doesn't make it in the rotation, he would go to the bullpen, which would give him a lefty down there. So they're still sorting it out, and that's what's going to be kind of the focus in spring training.
Final question for you. Who are some of the younger players that you are keeping an eye out during the spring that maybe necessarily won't break camp with the club, but we could see them down the line, possibly even in September?
Not in September, but one player that fans should really hopefully enjoy watching is Eloy Jimenez, and also Ian Happ. Happ is ranked number 1 on the MLB.com list of Cubs' top 30 prospects, and Jimenez is number 2. Happ has really come along a long way. He was a number 1 pick. Played a lot of second base, focused on that. Really good little infielder, and they've had him moving around, part of Madden's versatility thing. Jimenez is just a stud, big guy, power, outfielder. He's only 20 years old, so he was at Class A South Bend last year, so he's still a ways away. But if I were coming to spring training, those are the guys I'd kind of like to see, because I sort of like to see the future Cubs.
MLB.tv Premium, the number 1 live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.